draft's history.
No, not consistently, certainly. I think Tony Brackens was for a time.
Yeah, I'd give you that.
You know, like, I think he was among those kind of guys for a time. I think Calais was for
absolutely
a time. You know, but, and Jan was for a very brief moment in time, it feels like now. And, you know, that's part of the celebration, I would hope, from Jaguars fans is the unique Ngakoue situation. The Jags tried to pay him.
Yeah.
Multiple times they tried to pay him, and Jan didn't want their money.
Yeah.
Because of how he felt about the organization and all those different things. And I'm not saying it's unfair for Jan to have felt the way he felt. He felt how he felt.
Of
that's
course.
Fine. You know, and so he got himself out of town. He gets the franchise tag and gets traded and takes less money than the tag to make the trade happen. That's how badly he wanted out of Jacksonville. The Jalen thing, we've talked about all these things over and over and over. Josh Allen expressed early on that he wanted to be a Jaguar.
When nobody else wanted to be.
Right. And now after 5 years, he gets a contract done where he could be here for a decade. Right? As a first-round pick, we've seen enough of the guys that we all thought that could be a guy they can build it around, that they didn't figure out a way to keep him. And they got Josh Allen. Like, they got the deal done with Josh Allen. Again, I go back to, if you're a fan of this franchise, whatever level of frustration you have with it not being done a month ago and what it cost you in your mind as far as the opportunity to keep Calvin Ridley, I think all of those things are fair.
For sure.
But I don't think any of that should diminish being very happy that you got this guy in a Jaguars uniform for a full decade.
I think having franchise cornerstones and building blocks is immensely important for the health of a franchise. And not to compare him to any of these players, but, you know, Aaron Donald, the Rams, franchise cornerstone. J.J. Watt with Houston for so long. T.J. Watt with Pittsburgh. The Jaguars, for various reasons, they haven't they've had talented players, you know, in
Conway. They've had franchise cornerstone players that they couldn't make cornerstones.
Exactly. And Josh Allen is the bucking of that trend. I mean, you go back to 2010, there's only been three first-round picks, Allen included, who have signed extensions. Obviously, the argument is that they haven't had many first-round. Yeah. But even going to the second and third round, add those two rounds for a decade plus, and it's only nine players who have, in the first three rounds, who have signed contract extensions since 2010. Those are the players, when you pick them, that you expect to be there for a decade plus, that you expect to be the building blocks. And they simply haven't had that happen, and he's officially, you know, become it. And I also think it was extremely, I think, like, amicable, you know, the entire, you know, saga, honestly. Will he get paid, franchise tagged, all that. Not very much drama, you know, other than some...
Our drama.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Nothing like Ngakoue, anything. You know, you see some of these other players who get franchise tagged. Some of these other players who want to get paid. No, like, subliminal tweets, cryptic messages, anything like that. It, I thought, was a very smooth process. I remember coming on this show, I think it was around the combine. No, it was right after he got franchise tag, and I said they were a lot closer than I anticipated they would be. Like, this entire process, they've been closer than I think people probably thought or gave them credit for. And I think that's, you know, credit to the Jaguars probably understanding that, okay, no matter – what your true feelings probably are on the level of player, this is a deal that has to be done, and it has to be done like this.
Yeah, certainly they were closer than I thought they were.
Yeah,
you know, I've been very public with my statements that I think he's going to wind up playing on the franchise tag this year. Like, that's the way I thought it would play out. In the process, I'm thrilled to have been wrong.
Yeah.
Right? There is no hesitation on my part to say I was wrong. I couldn't be happier about them getting the deal done with Josh Allen, and I can't wait to see him in this uniform for the next 5 years and what exactly that's going to look like. That points to, you know, our question of the day today where we're asking, look, Josh was willing to very openly talk about goals in his career that he's been setting for himself since he started playing football, basically, and the goals that he's achieved, the legacies that he's left in places where he's been, specifically Kentucky, and talking about what that looks like in the future now with a second contract in Jacksonville. And for a player of his stature and ability, right, he had 17 and a half sacks. He set the single-season record for the franchise last year. You know, there is a lot of reasons to be very excited about Josh Allen, but I don't think any of it got me more excited than him in front of a microphone saying, that legacy stuff is important to me.
Yeah.
Right? And being remembered as the best defensive player, best player in this franchise's history. I want to win a Super Bowl MVP. You know, that's my goal. You know, that's what I want my legacy to be. It's like, what Jaguars players have ever talked about any of this that way?
Yeah.
Right? Thinking that far into the future. And look, there were fans that laughed at him and Trayvon Walker last year, right before the season, when they were like, what's the goal this year? And Josh was very blunt about it. He's like, I'm going to set the franchise record in sacks, right? That's the goal. And Trayvon said the same thing. And, you know, a lot of us scoffed maybe a little bit harder at Trayvon saying it than Josh Allen saying it. But Josh saying it, people were like, come on, man.
Nobody was predicting.
Right. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. And then the season started. And it's like, wait a minute. He might have a chance.
Yeah.
Right. To do something that special this season. But seeing a player signing a long-term contract with the Jaguars talking about legacy for himself after he leaves, I think that's a big moment for fans, I would hope. And it leads us to our question of the day, where we're just asking, you know, everyone out there, Josh is willing to talk about it. What do you think his legacy will wind up being when he gets done playing for the Jacksonville Jaguars? But it's a very wide open question as to what you think
for
that
sure
might be. But Josh is certainly thinking about it. And for fans, I think, take a day and think about it. You know, there's nothing out of bounds about that. If Josh is willing to do it, we can all join him for a few hours and think about what it would mean. Like, what do we expect the legacy of Josh Allen to be when he does hang it up?
My personal opinion, you go into the stadium, you see the names, you know, on the pride, you know, the Jimmy Smith, Fred Taylor, Mark Brunell. I think Josh Allen's name is going to be up there. I think he'll be the first defender to have his name up there. He obviously still has a little ways to go to be, you know, what he said. Mm-hmm. He wants to be the best defender in franchise history. I think you can already make an argument he's like in that top 10 right now, just what he's done so far. Still guys like Tony Brackens, Darryl Smith, Mike Peterson, John Henderson, Rasheen Mathis, all up there in front of him. But fast forward 5 years, and I think he'll be at the top of that list. To me, they're making the bet on not just the right kind of player, but right kind of person. You know, everything that he has said that he would do, he has done so far, you know, because he puts the work in the offseason. He's obviously, you know, a family-based guy who wants his roots here in Jacksonville. To me, he does everything the right way on and off the field. I was talking to a few other players yesterday who had just said that, you know, since they've gotten to Jacksonville, they've seen that he's the guy from day one. You know, mm-hmm. he sets the standard. And so I don't think he's one of those guys who, once he gets paid, you know, maybe he slips a little bit. I think that he can – the fact that he had such a good year last year, and I think he recognizes the things that helped him have that good of a year. Because he said, you know, was asked, you know, why did it take until year five to have a year like this? And he more or less said, well, I needed to grow up some. You know, not that he was immature, but he just needed to grow into life and as a pro – he's only entering his sixth year. He's still, you know, mid-20s. I think he's going to absolutely explode. And I think in 5 years, we'll obviously be looking at him as the all-time sack record holder. You know, he might be break that next year. But I think he's going to go down as the best defender in Jaguars history, because everything that he has said that he wanted to do so far, he's done. And I don't doubt that he'll do that.
Yeah, we did. You know, we're doing our Tuesday top fives here during the offseason. And this week on our Tuesday top five, we were – five most valuable draft picks the Jags have made, and we took Tony and Fred out of it.
Of course.
You know, and, you know, it was fun having the discussion about all of it, because it did feel like you take Tony and Fred out of it with that early run for the franchise, and you combine those two guys with Jimmy and Keenan and Mark, and those other three, you know, they didn't draft those guys.
Yeah.
They acquired those guys, right? But those were the five. You know, those were the core five on that football team, on a team that had a lot of talent on it. But those were kind of the core five players. And so, you know, when I was trying to put together my list, I'm looking at it thinking these different eras of Jaguars football. And when I started thinking about Jaguars football from an era perspective, I look at it and say, I think right now there's a really good argument to be made that the Jags, as not fun as it is to have this kind of discussion, might be in their third best era of football right now.
Yeah.
Right? In franchise history. I don't think it's better than 05 to 07.
No.
Right? And what they got done, you know, two playoff appearances and everything that they accomplished with those teams. But right now, having been a playoff team 2 years ago, they were one game out of the playoffs last year. You still have a young quarterback. They figured it out with Josh Allen. Like, all these different things that are in play. And when then trying to put together my top five, this is Tuesday. Josh hadn't gotten the deal done yet. And I'd be curious if we did that again today. You know, if Pockets and Dempsey would have included Josh Allen on their list. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what to do with Josh. I really didn't. And I wound up putting him at 5 on my list. I was like, I don't know what's going to happen with a long-term deal. If he gets that long-term deal done, he's going to be the best player in franchise history on defense.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if he gets that kind of thing done. Like, he's already on that kind of track.
Absolutely.
For his career. He's 10 sacks behind Tony Brackens for the franchise record holding spot. Tony played 3 more years than Josh Allen, right? Like, he's likely to catch that number this year. It's not a guarantee, but likely to catch that number this year. And by the time we get done 3-4 years down the line, like, how far in the rearview mirror all those guys will be. I'm curious to see what's going to happen with Trayvon Walker and how he may be able to develop after a real breakout kind of season for him in year 2. And what that's going to look like going into year 3 and beyond. But, you know, I was thinking Josh is the best player potentially in franchise history on defense Tuesday.
Yeah.
You know, and then Wednesday happens, and I'm like, this dude's going to be the best, you know, in franchise history. Like, I have very little doubt that that's where he's going to wind up when we get done with this second contract.
He could legit be a 100 sack guy. You know,
a decade
with the team, 100 sacks. That is... it's something that's never happened with the team, obviously. I think he's putting himself in unprecedented territory just in terms of legacy. And it was interesting to me how often he mentioned Kentucky, too.
Yeah.
You could tell that when he says these things about legacy and wanting to be the best, that they're important to him because he remembers conversations he had with Mark Stoops in, like, 2017, 2018 about these kind of things. So I'm with you. And, I, to your Trayvon point, when they drafted Trayvon first overall, Josh hadn't had this kind of season yet, so you didn't even have yet the clear picture in your mind of what Trayvon could look like across from a guy like Josh Allen, who is arguably, you know, top 5, top 6 pass rusher in the NFL. I think he's going to be huge for Trayvon. He mentioned yesterday Trayvon, you know, texted him and saying that he had an off day, but he saw he got paid, so he decided to work out.
Yeah,
that to me shows the kind of impact.
Push one another.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why paying your best players, to me, is important, your homegrown talent. It sends a message to the rest of the locker room that if you do what this guy does, if you work as hard as he does on the field, off the field, if you produce like he does, you will be rewarded for it. So, and there's definitely been questions in the past in Jacksonville about that kind of thing. You've seen some of the best players on the team. Obviously, it's deeper than this, but Jalen and Yannick not get paid while Blake Bortles are getting paid. That definitely had a residual effect on the locker room when you're paying the wrong people. But when you pay the best people, that to me is a culture changer. So I know it probably went longer than people thought, but the fact that this got done as clean and smoothly as it was without any drama, you know, before the draft, everything, I think all in all, good outcome. You know, you can debate how much it impacted Ridley, stuff like that. The more I think about it, you know, contract talks are such a fluid thing. Like if you're Josh's agent, do you even want to, you know, take a contract, you know, a couple months ago? I mean, now that he waited for the market.
Right, if it was 33, 34.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if you're – again, we talked about it at the time. If you're willing to make that very top of the market offer.
Absolutely.
Then I think that would have been enough to get the deal done if keeping him and Calvin Ridley was the priority. Like, if that's the way that you rank the priorities going into the offseason, then you could have gotten that done.
100%.
By making an offer he would say yes to. If you're – like, we'll see what's going to happen with the whole process, then you're going to have to react to other deals that get done.
Yeah. And, I mean, how close this was to the Brian Burns deal. It's like, it's right. Obvious that the Brian Burns deal greatly impacted us.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly did. And we'll continue to react to the Josh Allen deal. We'll talk about what kind of impact it may have on other things that they would be thinking about doing, specifically in the draft. You know, we've heard a couple of names that might be available in trade. How does that impact the Jaguars' interest in maybe trading for an Ayuk or a T. Higgins? Now that they've gotten that done and created at least $13 million more in cap space this year, does that have any impact on them being willing to make that kind of a move? Again, our question of the day today asking, after Josh is willing to talk about his legacy here in Jacksonville, what do you think it'll wind up being when he gets done playing here as a member of the Jacksonville Jaguars? John Shipley, Tony Smith, Dylan Denmark here with you. Getting things rolling here on a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Tony Smith, John Shipley, Pockets here with you. Mike Dempsey on assignment. I think his assignment right now is probably dodging all the rain for the next few hours with he and his friend out on the golf course for the next couple of days. Today, not so kind as a trying to figure out exactly what that's going to look like for him, but the rest of the week's going to be beautiful. Tomorrow and in through the weekend. It's the same kind of deal up at Augusta. They're finally getting on the golf course here in the next couple minutes up there. We'll have our updates throughout the morning here on 1010 XL as, you know, everyone's got eyes on Tiger. Is he going to be able to make another cut at the Masters? And so we'll keep an eye on what's going on with that. Asked you or mentioned before the break that how does Josh Allen getting that deal done affect the rest of the Jaguars offseason now? Because they did create, it looks like, at least $13 million more in cap space for this year. So do you think they have something in mind for how they would want to use that? Does that mean they're more in play for a trade on a guy like Ayuk or Higgins? Or how do you read them creating that much more cap space for this year?
I want to say they have somewhere between 30 and 33 million in cap space right now. Like they definitely have enough to make, you know, some kind of substantial move. My read on it is I know how they've operated in the past. They like going into the season with some cap space just because it gives you flexibility, you know, whether it comes to the trade deadline or you need to make any other move. To me, I don't think like this says like any move is imminent or anything, but it does give them the flexibility, and I think they're very cognizant of having that flexibility to make some kind of blockbuster move, because seemingly out of nowhere, the AFC South has become, you know, an arms race, you know, for blockbuster moves. And, you know, if they wanted to, you know, send a, you know, reply to the Stephon Diggs move, you know, some of the other, the Calvin Ridley, you know, signing in Tennessee.
Yeah.
They now have the opportunity to do that, whereas they didn't before. That doesn't mean they're going to do it, but there's at least value in having the opportunity to be involved in those kind of discussions. I think that T. Higgins would obviously be the ultimate dream. I'm just so unsure of how to read his situation. Cincinnati has had before guys on franchise tag request to be traded, and they're just – they have an old-school owner, old-school front office. They like to sit there basically and cross their arms and say, too bad. So I don't think that they're in any rush to trade T. Higgins. Brandon Ayuk, I think he obviously, you know, has been pretty vocal about pay me or trade me. Mm-hmm. That's a move that, you know, I definitely could see potentially happening, or at very least him being on the move somewhere, especially in a deep receiver class like this year's. San Francisco could realistically have a chance to replace him. Those are, I think, the two guys. And honestly, there's a third guy that I think, you know, could potentially be mentioned as a, you know, possibility just in terms of hypotheticals, and that's DK Metcalf. You know, the Seahawks drafted receiver in the first round last year. There's been murmurs there for, like, the last couple of years about them and DK just maybe not being on the same page. So if any of these number one type receivers are going to be traded, I think it's those three. I'm not anticipating any move. I'm not one of these people with a tinfoil hat saying they made this extension so now they can go trade for Ayuk. But I do think that they're aware they have the possibility to make a move like that, which I obviously is more valuable than, you know, being hamstrung and not being able to do anything.
Yeah, I think the Higgins situation is interesting from a lot of different facets, right? Because I do think fans want to see the Jaguars make the deal happen.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's, I really want him. Get it done. Like, that's the way it feels to me with a lot of the fan base right now. And I try to put myself in the position of, if I'm the Bengals, right? And I look at it and say, well, the second round pick doesn't interest me.
No.
You know, it just doesn't interest
me. They're better off with T. Higgins
this
year.
It's, I'd rather have Chase and Higgins playing together for another year, and then he'll be gone, and we'll get that third round pick back. It's like, okay, you gave me one more round of value this year as opposed to playing with them for a year? No.
Yeah.
Like, that's not worth it to me. Are you willing to talk about 17? Now you got my interest.
Yeah.
Right? But I think that's what it would take for Cincinnati's side of it to even be interested in making a move with T. Higgins at this point in the process. Because if I were the Bengals, I really would. I'd be comfortable. Be like, oh, no, we have to play with Chase and Higgins for another year? What are we going to do?
Yeah.
Like, there's, that's not a problem that they need to fix. It's how interested in you are in fixing a problem you see on your roster. Because we don't see this as a problem, right? Having Higgins for another year playing in our offense. We'll be fine doing it that way. And I think San Francisco in a lot of ways is the same kind of deal. But they have Ayuk who is saying the pay me or trade me. Yeah. Pay me or trade me. Pay me or trade me. And it does feel like they're going to go through an entire offseason of every time they want to talk to him about any of it, they're going to offer something and he's going to go, pay me or trade me. Like it's going to be like a parrot, you know, like it's just going to be every time that they bring it up with him. And so, but I think it's the same kind of spot. Are you willing to give up 17?
Yeah.
Because unless that's the price you're willing to pay for one of those guys, and I don't think it's unreasonable to say, no, that's too much.
I agree with you. Because both those guys, not only are you giving up 17, you're paying them on top of it.
Yes.
And obviously, they both deserve to be paid like that. It's not any fans' money, et cetera. But just from a team-building perspective, I don't think Trent Baalke is the kind of general manager who is comfortable with giving up not a top 20 bold. Pick and
yeah.
panic.
Yeah, like I said it a couple weeks ago, and I'm still on the same side of it. I would be willing to give up 17 for Ayuk.
Yeah.
I would. I'd be willing to give that up and pay him. I'd be willing to make that kind of deal, to be that aggressive
yeah.
with that position for that player. I don't think it's nuts that the franchise wouldn't feel that way.
No.
Right? Like, I can understand the other side of it saying, no, that's way too much. Right? Like, 17 and I got to pay him, that's too much. I'm not willing to pay that price for that player. I get that side of it. I'd be willing to do it, but as I joke around on the show about all the time, I'm really good at spending other people's money. You know, like it. I really like Ayuk the player. I'm willing to pay that price for that player, but it's not me spending my money. It's
Absolutely.
Me spending theoretical money, and I'm happy to spend it on that player. And when they say no, I'm not going to look at them and say, "What fools for yeah. not having spent that money on Ayuk?" I get it.
I'm with you, especially you look at the wide receiver position specifically. And who the best receivers in football are today, and who the highest paid receivers in football are today, how many of them are first round picks? Like it's just, it's the one position, it seems like, where you have the chance to find a star in virtually any given round. And I think when you have a receiver class as deep as this one is, I think it's perfectly reasonable to say, no, 17's off the table. And also, dealing 17 to me, that's a move that a front office would make that feels the heat. You know, that feels the pressure. I'm not sure Trent Baalke in that front office feels the pressure.
Should they?
There's so many different ways to look at it. They should be better than they are going into year four of Trevor Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if you're Shad Khan, they've had two technically winning seasons in a row. When's the last time, you know,
yeah.
that happened? I personally lean toward the side of you know, Trevor Lawrence is about to get paid. They should have taken more advantage of this window. But I can perfectly see it from the team side being that, you know, we've at very least have become respectable after being a laughing stock for years. I don't think he's on the hot seat. And because of that, I don't think he is a GM who makes moves like a GM who feels the pressure, who's on the hot seat. He's looking ahead. You look at how this Josh Allen contract extension is even structured. It's structured like a guy, like Trent Baalke was a guy who's expecting to still be the general manager in 2027, 2028 when big decisions have to be made.
Yeah, no doubt. That's talking about it from the perspective of the impact of the Josh Allen deal on what other big deal they might be able to make in this offseason. How does it affect the 17th pick in the draft and the directions they could go with that? We'll get into that on the show this morning as well. We had Demetrius Harvey on yesterday. He had Jared Verse going to the Jags at 17 in a mock on
Mock Draft Monday.
Right? And Wednesday he joins us on the show and he's like, yeah, I don't think I'd do that again. Like he does feel like he pivoted off that a little bit with the Josh Allen deal being done now, but does it impact it, the look at 17 the same way for John Shipley and myself as we continue to react to Josh Allen getting that 5-year extension done with the team? We'll continue to react to that as we go throughout the show this morning. You're listening to a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
I have to remind myself to go whenever Nirvana is the rejoin music here on the show. Tony Smith, John Shipley, Pockets here with us as we get a little in bloom on the way back in there from Nirvana. Dempsey would laugh at me for caring about Nirvana. I don't care. I do. I always have, and I think I always will.
I love Nirvana. It's one of the few bands that predate my birth, rock bands that I enjoy.
You get it.
Yeah.
Right?
100%.
With the quakes they made in the music industry.
Yeah. I love listening to old rock songs at Jack's training camp and dating Mike DeRocca by asking him, who is Metallica exactly?
Oh, goodness. Right? He should know that one. They've been going since he was a kid.
Exactly.
You know, it's been a long time. Metallica's been doing this whole thing about 40 years. They've been writing music now. The boys there of Metallica want to get out to the phone lines for the first time here this morning talking about the question of the day. We're asking Josh Allen's willing to talk about legacy here in Jacksonville. What do you think that legacy will wind up being for Josh Allen after he signs that 5-year contract extension? John over on the west side has dialed us up at 641-1010. What's going on this morning, John?
Hey, good morning. The weather's going on this morning.
Yeah, ain't no doubt.
Just wanted to touch on a couple of things. A well-deserved contract. I think he's going to go down as one of the best Jag players to ever strap it on. A lot of times we forget that every Sunday he goes against the best player of every other team in the league. He doesn't get a break. A lot of times he's double-teamed. And to get 17 sacks is a huge, huge accomplishment. So I think he's going to go down as one of the best defensive players that ever played here. And if we give up the 17th pick, does that mean we get theirs or we just give it up completely? And another question, what about Jefferson? Is he even a possibility? And I'll take your comments off the air. Thanks. Doing a good job, Tony.
Thank you very much, John. I think if you're talking about giving up 17 to go get one of those wide receivers, no. They're getting the wide receiver back what they'd be getting back.
It would be pretty good, Cincinnati, since they picked 18th.
Yeah, that'd be cool. If they want to give us 18 and T. Higgins, I'm for it. If that's the deal that they want to make to move up one spot in the draft and lose one of their best players on the offensive side of the ball, I'm for it. If Cincinnati would want to get in on that kind of madness, it's – I think if you're talking about giving up 17, you're talking about giving up 17 for a player.
100%.
Right? And maybe, you know, he mentioned Marvin Harrison, or excuse me, he mentioned Justin Jefferson, whoever, Jefferson, up there in Minnesota. Like, it's with that kind of deal, it's going to be your first round pick this year, probably your first round pick next year, and something else. That's
a Tyreek Hill level trade. Plus, probably making him the highest paid wide receiver in NFL history.
If you're willing to pay that price because you believe in that player that much, okay. I can understand making the argument for, well, okay, spend it.
Yeah.
Right? I can understand there's some portion of the fan base that says, all right, spend it. I'm willing to spend the 17th pick on Ayuk. I am, to do that and pay him. I'd have to think a lot about Jefferson if they actually made him available in that kind of trade. I think it would take at least that to get Minnesota to bite.
Yeah.
On making that kind of move, but I'd have to think hard about if I'd be willing to give up 2 first-round picks and something else to go get him.
So I want to run a theory by you that I've had. So, you know, you look at Trent Baalke's career as a general manager dating back to with the 49ers. I think he's picked 9 wide receivers over about a decade of drafting with 2 teams. Only 1 receiver has come before the 4th round. Only 2 of the Jaguars in general. So he's more or less has, like, punted on making significant investments in the draft at receiver. Is there anything to maybe the idea that he just feels better evaluating receivers once they hit the NFL and he knows what they are? Because he certainly has paid for receivers since he's been with the Jaguars, Christian Kirk, Gabe Davis, Say Jones. Maybe that would make him more inclined to maybe trade for a guy like T.R. Ayuk as opposed to spending the 17th pick or trading up for a wide receiver. I just feel like maybe it's one of those blind spots that he potentially biases that he maybe has. That's a theory I've been working on since Gabe Davis signed.
I think the theory holds some weight in concert with, you know, the idea of fans certainly have the idea of Trent Baalke that he's really good in free agency and not so great in the draft. Right? Like, that's a common refrain.
Yeah.
That we hear, even reacting to what they got done in free agency this year, it's like, I'm surprised he did as well as he did, right? Like, that seemed to be a lot of the reaction from the fan base was, I'm actually surprised with the limited resources they had that he got done what they got done in this offseason. And, you know, even talking to those fans and saying, well, now you get to go through the roller coaster of a draft with Trent Baalke, right? Like, that's still where the ride ends, you know, for the offseason is whatever's going to happen in the draft. And I think along those kind of lines, I don't think it's crazy to have in your head, well, he's just not very good. You know, he's not very accomplished at the draft part of this. And I do think the draft part of this is the much more important part.
Much more important.
Right, of the process. And it's a big part of the reason why I've been okay with moving on from Trent Baalke for a number of years now. It's they're not doing a good enough job in the draft unless it's slapping him in the face with, you got to take Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
Right, you're going to take Trayvon Walker or Aiden Hutchinson. And it turns out they're both good players. I'm not convinced he got the better player of the two ultimately, but they're both good players in the NFL. Okay, they were picking number one. He ought to pick good players. They're picking number one.
The draft exists beyond the first round.
Right. It's that not a whole lot outside of that has been great.
Yeah.
The ATN pick turns out it's okay. You know,
and that still feels like an Urban pick, honestly.
And a first-round pick on a running back that you're probably not going to be bringing back for a second contract. Like, there are a bunch of things that go into feeling okay or not okay about the ETN pick, ultimately. But I think it's fair to look at Trent Baalke at this point in his Jaguars tenure and looking at what he did in San Francisco on top of that and say, huh, he's got real weaknesses at certain spots in the draft, especially. And one of those weaknesses happens to be wide receiver, and that happens to be one of the positions everyone has circled as a possibility at 17.
Two receivers in three drafts, both in the sixth round, is just with the like string of receiver classes that we've seen the last 3 years. That to me is one of the, I think, biggest red flags of this tenure. And I've been critical, you know, in the past. I've aligned, you know, pretty closely to you. There's obviously been a lot of good, but I think just paying as much as they have for the receiver position and not taking any dart throws. I mean, you know, they've picked two running backs in the top 100 and no receivers. That's just not.
And I think it points to not only does it expand the opportunities you think they may be willing to take advantage of in trading for one of those two guys.
Yeah.
But I think it also speaks to in a draft where everyone is pretty sure the top three wide receivers are really good, right? Like, that's how everyone seems to feel about it, that instead of playing the, well, I think Brian Thomas Jr. is going to be awesome, right? That Baalke may be the guy that says, yeah, that may be the case. Let's go get Marvin, right? Like, it wouldn't surprise me if he ends up saying, all right, you want this year's first and next year's first, fine.
100%.
If it means I get that guy. Like, I do think it makes that possibility more likely.
I do too.
Because of who the GM is and if he's willing to recognize that he hasn't been great at doing that in particular.
And also, if you're making that kind of trade as opposed to a trade for T. Higgins or Ayuk, you have 4 to 5 cost-controlled years for a, you know, potential top 10, top 15 receiver. Mm-hmm. That's immensely valuable, especially for a team that's about to pay Trevor Lawrence. If they can get a number one receiver on a rookie contract, I think it makes a lot of sense. I'm with you. I think for as much as he's avoided receivers in the draft, I really do think trading up for a receiver is very much on the table. Because, like I said, I could see them wanting to send, you know, a shot across the bow, you know, over to Houston, Tennessee, Indianapolis, saying we're making big moves too, you know, at the wide receiver position and going to get one of those big three guys. Because I really do think, and this is just my personal evaluation, you can look, I've been tweeting about the draft for a long time. You can look and see how often I've been wrong, but I just think the gap between those three and those next tier of guys, you know, Brian Thomas, Adonai Mitchell, whoever you want to say, is massive. I think it's, you know, maybe a whole potentially around difference. And so I think if you're sold that receiver is a position you need to hit, I think trading up for one of those guys makes more sense than hoping one of these guys at 17, you know, can work out.
We can continue to talk about specifically the wide receiver position. It's interesting. You mentioned that you think there may be around a difference between the top three and whoever the fourth receiver in this draft would be. How many of those receivers beyond those top three would have a first-round grade, do you think, in NFL teams' minds? And we'll get into that as we continue along, because I do think it's important, given that look, those top three aren't going to be available to them unless they trade up to go get them. And we'll know what they're doing when they make that move. It'll be like they're going up there to get one of these wide receivers, right? But if that doesn't happen and they are still in the market for a wide receiver when they're picking at 17, what do these other guys actually look like from an evaluation standpoint? We'll also get to the news from around the National Football League, including a Hall of Famer, O.J. Simpson. I don't know how else to describe O.J. Simpson.
Heisman winning running back.
Yeah, well, he had to give that back, too.
Dang it.
O.J. Simpson has passed away. So we'll get to some of the news from around the National Football League as we continue along. We'll talk about the evaluation of some of these receivers in the draft as well as we continue along. It's a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today here on 1010XL.
1010XL is presented by Farrah & Farrah, exclusive injury law firm of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Protecting you and your family. Call 396-5555, Jacksonville. Everything you need to know about the Jags. Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Tony Smith, John Shipley, Dylan Denmark here with you. Mike Dempsey on assignment. Now the shots are going to some actual golf shots at Augusta. That's fun. I am a sucker for this tournament. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to get home today and turn it on and probably not turn it off till it's done. I'll probably be watching the Braves game on my phone. That's how serious I am about Augusta when it's going on. So happy Augusta National Day to all of us who celebrate the first major golf tournament of the year. They're back on the golf course now after the weather has moved through there. We'll get to some of the news from around the National Football League here in just a moment. But first, want to hear from Josh Allen, who did speak to the media yesterday down at the stadium just a few hours after the deal got announced that he was going to be signing the extension here with the Jacksonville Jaguars. This speaks to our question of the day today, asking Josh willing to talk about legacy, so you can too. What do you believe Josh Allen's legacy will wind up being here with the Jacksonville Jaguars? Josh Allen yesterday said that he wants to be the best Jags defensive player ever.
Coming here getting drafted, I wanted to be the best defensive player to ever come out of Jacksonville history. And, you know, I got five more years to keep stacking. And I'm excited about that. I'm excited for it. And whoever tries to come get my record, it's going to be a very tall task, and I'm going to make it very hard for them.
Josh Allen thinking about the future, man. Always has been, it seems like, hearing from him yesterday in Kentucky and reflecting on all the things that he's done to this point in his career. One more here from Josh, who just talked about Tony Brackens. That's the man he's chasing on the all-time sack list in franchise history. And Calais Campbell, who probably would have wound up at the top of that list if he had been here more than 3 years in a Jaguars uniform, but was fantastic in the three they had him down there. But Josh Allen talked about T-Brack and Calais Campbell as mentors for him.
I know I'm 10 sacks away from leading franchise history in total sacks, I think. And Tony Brackens, who's become a big mentor of mine throughout these years. And just to know that, you know, I'm right on his heels, man, is a blessing. And I passed Calais, who was another mentor of mine coming in. So knowing that I did that, you know, was huge. And then now it's Tony. You know, it's, you know, I'm getting emotional again, but I'm going to say that to my wife and I.
We all get a little emotional when T-Brack's involved, don't we? No, I'm just kidding. But it's cool that I never am really all that aware of how impactful Tony Brackens is for any of these guys, right? Like, it's kind of this mystery in all of it. We were talking about it again before the show that I can remember when they were announcing the 25th anniversary, the top 25 players in franchise history, and T-Brack was going to be very high on that list, and he was down there during a pregame for one of the games, whatever week they were bringing all those guys on the field doing whatever they were doing during that season, honoring all those guys throughout the year. And T-Brack came in, and we had to tell him where he was on the list. You know, like, that's how awesome. Unassuming that that's guy awesome. Is. So we were like, how's it feel to be in? He's like, I'm what? Oh, that's cool. You know, like, that's just his personality.
It is.
You know, he's happier on his farm than he is doing anything else after he got done playing. He's just
perfect
happy
Jaguar
to be out there doing that kind of – right. If only you could have a farm doing what he was doing here as opposed to needing to do it out in Texas. We'd at least have him around a little bit. But, yeah, it's cool to hear from Josh Allen because if you are talking about the two best to have done it in a Jaguars uniform to this point, he got the right two names, right? Like, it is Tony Brackens and Calais Campbell are the two best before – Josh Allen, and I don't think either of us expect it's going to take long if it hadn't already happened that he's the best.
No, I fully expect it by the end of this contract, obviously, for it to be unanimous that he's not just the best pass rusher, but one of the best defenders, or really one of the best players overall. One thing I went back to yesterday, you know, when I was rereading the transcript, re-listening to it, writing all that, was some of the things he said about competing, you know, he was challenging people to come for his record. You know, he said that he wanted to be the best player on the team. I legitimately think those things matter to him and those things fuel him. So I think the more players that come through, you know, Trayvon, any other pass rushers come through, I think that only serves to help Josh, to motivate him, because I think he was dead on the money when he said, like, the job's not done. You know, like, obviously, momentous occasion, biggest moment of his career, but I believe the next 5 years will have more in store for the Jaguars and Josh Allen than the first 5 years of his career had. I'm with you. And I didn't know about his relationship with Tony, that it was like that until yesterday. You know, I feel like I have a pretty good relationship with Josh. I didn't know about that. And I think that's important too. The past, you know, reaching into the present, having those relationships. To me, that says, you know, that you are that guy. You know, like, you are in the moment, you know, you're the guy to kind of carry the mantle. And those things matter. I mean, becoming the first $100 million player in franchise history, that to me is, you know, that no matter what happens, how many millions of dollars Trevor Lawrence, whoever else gets paid in the future, Josh Allen will always be the first $100 million player in franchise history. And, you know, it's legitimately say, I know different eras and all that, but to this point, he's the most valuable, you know, player just from a financial standpoint. And that, to me, says a lot.
Yeah, and we'll see how quickly that gets overtaken with whatever's going to happen with Trevor Lawrence, you know. And, you know, we were talking about the money created on the Josh Allen deal and what could they use that money for. Well, one of the things they could use it on is Trevor Lawrence, if that's the direction they want to go. If there isn't some big move that falls into their laps here over the next few weeks leading into the draft, and they wind up with, well, we're going to spend it on something. Why not Trevor?
I'm hoping to time the day Trevor signs his contract with needing to do yard work, because that's a day I just want to turn my phone off, log off, ignore that, go mow the lawn, go do anything else other than read the opinions of, because I, you know, if Trevor got paid a, you know, $50-55 million per year contract today, I we both know what kind of quarterback he is, but the types of reactions I think that you would see on social media nationally and even locally, it would be a day. Would be a day.
We got a lot of that on Friday on the show, where people that were willing to, you know, I can understand the inclination of maybe you don't have friends who care.
Yeah.
You know, all that much about your opinion on anything related to the Jaguars, but especially specifically the quarterback, you know, that kind of thing. And look, we're open. You know, 641-1010, if you want to share your opinion, you're allowed to share your opinion. That doesn't mean that I have to say, oh, that's reasonable, you know, with a lot of the things. And, like, I can understand needing to get that venom out.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I can understand that instinct.
Everybody's right.
Right, from the fans out there, but man, some of the Trevor Lawrence stuff. And, you know, even having to bring it up on Friday, I'm just like, guys, you know, look at what he was doing with his rookie year. His second year in the league, he took him to the playoffs and came back from 24-0. Like, it's not that he's accomplished nothing.
Yeah.
You know, in the 3 years that he's been here. Last year didn't explode the way we all wanted to see it explode, but a lot of things blew up on Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there were things that were happening that go beyond, I just didn't see the big, massive breakout year that I thought I would see. This guy was supposed to be XYZ. Like, all those different things that people talk about. Like, I wish I could get everyone to take a step back.
100%.
And actually see, you know, what he has accomplished to this point in his career and the potential that he still has to grow. And that doesn't, it doesn't diminish my disappointment that it didn't go better last year than it did.
Yeah, it definitely should have.
Right.
He should have played better.
Right.
You know?
Like, and I think that he can play way better than he showed last year. But I don't think looking at his worst moments from his first three seasons and say, see, I told you. It's like, well, how about you look at his best moments too?
Yeah.
Right? And at least point to those and say, how about we measure these against one another and decide which one we think is more likely Trevor Lawrence, right? And what we could potentially see into the future, which is how I would react to an extension if they announced it today.
100%.
But I do think there is a vocal minority group of fans in the fan base that would be, what is wrong with them?
Oh, but after that Week 18 loss of Titans, you know, that so some of the mentions, I had people talking about Jane Daniels and stuff like that. You know, it's
crazy.
It's what comes with the quarterback position. You know, it's very much.
I mean, Josh Allen dealt with it all last year.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
like
same
it wasn't
thing.
All that different for him last year.
There were people upset they didn't trade Josh Allen at the deadline in 2022. Yeah, a lot of people forget how often his name was coming up in talks then. You know, it definitely. The NFL, I think, more so than any other league, is a what have you done for me lately?
Yeah.
You know, league in terms of perception.
Yeah. I took a lot of heat when the Josh Allen stuff would come up, and I was like, okay, first round pick plus.
Yeah.
What are you willing to give beyond that? And maybe two first round picks for Josh Allen. Like, that's what my price would be for someone to come in and get him. And people were like, what are you, out of your mind? I was like, no, I'm not. I may be proven wrong. Right, when everything plays out, it's going to play out in front of all of us. Like, I may look like a fool eventually on this, but I certainly don't look like a fool now.
The big team that were rumored then was the Kansas City Chiefs, and that first-round pick would have been the 32nd overall pick.
Right.
Imagine sitting here now, the Jaguars had traded Josh Allen for the 32nd overall pick. People would have pitchforks and torches.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's a very – and again, you know, like you said, it's their right, you know, fans. Fan is short for fanatic. You're supposed to – be emotionally invested like that. But
there are things that I am stupidly emotional about.
Yeah.
You know, I can totally understand it. I've had moments where I'll be screaming at the TV about something, and then I'll second later, I'm like, what is wrong with you?
Cubs blew an 8-0 lead in an April game the other day and made me not want to talk to anybody for 2 days. I'm like, but, you know.
Yeah, the Braves blew a 6-0 lead two days ago.
Yeah.
To the Mets. It's like, I didn't want to talk to anybody, you know, while that was going on.
Exactly.
I had a roommate that was in the house watching the game and cheering different stuff that was happening. In my head, I was like, shut up. You know, like, none of that. Like, I do. I understand that instinct.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, when it comes to sports especially. Let's get to some of the news from around the National Football League.
Now, gems around the NFL, brought to you by Beaches Jewelry and Pawn in Jack's Beach.
The Baltimore Ravens are signing wide receiver Deonte Hardy to a one-year deal. Hardy was an all-pro return man as a rookie in New Orleans in 2019, spent 4 years there before playing one season last year in Buffalo. Former NFL player Terrell Suggs was arrested on Tuesday following an incident in a Scottsdale Starbucks drive-thru that reportedly involved Suggs backing into another car in the drive-thru line. Eventually, Suggs and the man in the other car got out. They were arguing with one another before he got back into his car, rolled down his window as he was leaving the drive-thru, may have extended one of his hands out the window, and another hand that was holding a gun, is the report, threatened the other man with whatever level of threat you consider that to be. Suggs has already said that he was in fear for his and his family's life, and that's why he showed the gun at the time. Authorities say that Suggs never pointed the gun at the other man involved. Good luck working all that out. It is an incident that happened weeks ago, but he was arrested yesterday. And the news this morning, O.J. Simpson has passed away after complications from cancer at the age of 76. O.J. is a Hall of Famer and was very deserving of that when that was the honor that he was given. He was a first-team All-Pro 5 years in a row from 1972 to 1976, led the NFL in rushing in four of those five seasons, including 2,003 yards in 14 games in 1973, but he's better known for much more heinous things since
his
playing career ended. Allegedly did, and was found guilty in a civil lawsuit, but never in a criminal court.
How many people are there, you think, that don't know him as a football player?
Oh, a bunch.
Yeah.
A bunch. Like, it's the Dylan. Dylan, how much do you know about OJ the football player beyond what I just said?
I know a lot about the football player.
You do?
Yeah, but the other stuff, eh. I know a little bit. I know enough. I know enough to carry a conversation.
Uh-huh. I think you're lying. That's what I think just happened on the show, is I think that you're fibbing a little bit there. But I do think there are a lot of,
I do too.
You know, fans 35 and under in the league that most of what they're going to hear about O.J. Simpson is all the heinous things.
Yes.
You know, and, you know, I was telling you when the news came out, O.J. is the only – I don't block anything on Twitter. O.J. is the only thing I blocked when it happened. When O.J. joined Twitter, I was like, I don't need to know anything about what this guy's got going
Hello,
on.
Hello, Twitter world.
Right, or what he's doing.
That's what I'm really going to miss.
Right, like I just don't care.
Given his thoughts on fantasy and just, bets to make. Yeah,
none of that matters. Yeah. It's like this guy should be – if he was tweeting all this out from his prison cell, you know, I might be more open to seeing it. You know, eventually, I'd still be – it's unconscionable that he got away with what he got away with, it appears, with – oh, my gosh, just heinous what happened. And now he's gone. And so fans can react to OJ and everything that happened. It's a – whew. It's a complicated thing.
It is. It's going to be a day.
Right? Because I just went through the numbers. Like, there's no denying how great of a football player he was, right? Like, there's no denying, and there's not a whole lot of denying how much of a bad dude he was.
I didn't know how big of a pop culture and, like, movie star that he was either until I watched, like, that Netflix documentary, because I was born late 90s. First things I ever learned about O.J. was obviously his trial and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I didn't know just how big O.J. was until the stuff like that documentary and stuff came out.
Well, so Tony, when like that happened, like he was a cultural icon. Like who in today, like if that happened with OJ, running from the police, like who could you put in context for today that happening? Like you'd be like, there's no way that's happening.
It'd be like Peyton Manning
or The Rock.
Yeah, it'd have to be to be that culturally relevant.
Yeah.
Like I think it would have to be like. Peyton's different because it's a quarterback, so the discussion is – but he is everywhere in the media, right? And I think it's hard to explain just how much O.J. was on your TV just because your TV was on. Like, and he was beloved, you know, as a player and a personality. There wasn't a whole lot about O.J. that people weren't like, yeah, you know, you smile. When O.J. came on the TV, it's like, there he is, you know? Like that kind of thing, and then it all – fell apart so just awful, you know, in the end. But I don't – yeah, Peyton would be pretty good, you know, in that because –
The Rock was a good one.
The Rock's pretty good too. Like if they were involved in something that devastating. I can remember being on the air across the street when the news was breaking that police are at Aaron Hernandez's house.
Yeah.
Right, and thinking, what?
I was in a Home Depot in line, and I was like, what the heck is going on? You know?
Like, what is happening with Aaron Hernandez? And then you find out what happened with Aaron Hernandez, you know? And it's similar. He's not the level of icon, you know, that O.J. Simpson was. But you saw the whole world reacting to that as it was happening. It at least gives you an idea of what that kind of thing would be.
I mean,
you know, as many bad boys as there are, in professional sports, there's not a whole lot of guys that are getting away with or trying any of those kind of things. Like murder? That's crazy.
Nah.
Right? That someone would be involved in that, and you can feel about Ray Lewis and Marvin Harrison, however you want to feel about their involvement or lack of involvement in any of those things. They're both in the Hall of Fame now, and all that, you know, it dripped right off them.
Yeah.
In the end, they didn't have to carry any of that, and you can hold them wherever you want to hold them. You know, in your mind, as far as what kind of men they were fantastic football players. And if that's all you want to remember about any of them or O.J. Simpson, that's your prerogative to do those kind of things. I'm going to be looking at O.J. and not be able to see past the murderer.
I'd imagine that's how a lot of people.
Like most people, I would expect that that's where it lands. But he did pass away today after complications with cancer. So feel about all that however you want. With OJ being gone, we'll continue to react to Josh Allen getting that deal done. Another Masters update coming up here in a moment as well. Tony Smith, John Shipley, Dylan Denmark here with you. You're listening to a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today here on 1010XL.
This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Tony Smith, John Shipley here with you, continuing to react to Josh Allen getting that deal done. Let's hear a little bit more from Josh Allen. It felt like it was a bit of a storyline last year going through the offseason. Josh went around.
For sure.
You know, showed up for the mandatory mini camp and then was here for training camp, obviously. There was no issue with Josh Allen. But with him getting the deal done, there's been some speculation, you know, yesterday morning that I guess this means it's the end of that. He'll be here for all of everything that's happening. Josh has his own opinion on that. Not so fast. We'll see what's going to happen with exactly what that's going to look like. But Josh did say yesterday that he's going to be working out on his own again this year.
Doing what I do that got me here in the first place. And, you know, yes, OTAs for me, I can't speak for everybody, but for me, it's to value that individual time that I have, that I can maximize my value and come back with a purpose and come back physically in shape and mentally in shape, that, you know, I could go and perform at a very high level, and it worked for me. And so for me, why not do what got me in there in the first place? I know it probably, oh, he's not voluntary, he's not here. My teammates know I love them. You know what I'm saying? Like, they know I'll do anything for them. They know I'm one phone call away.
Yeah. I mean, he's not going anywhere.
No.
And like he said, he'll be here for the early part.
Yeah.
And it makes sense, you know, in light of they have a new defensive coordinator, which means they have a new defense. So whatever that early install is going to be, it's going to be vital for a guy like Josh Allen.
100%. But outside of that, if I'm Josh Allen, I'm doing everything I did last year. If I'm the Jaguars, I know it goes against all football guy isms and stuff, but if I'm the Jaguars, I'm like, do what you got to do, dude. Whatever you did last year to recreate it, do what you got to do, because it very much, you know, I think made an impact. And listening to him talk yesterday about how important he thought that training was for him in the offseason. And I remember you and I in this, you know, the same table talking about that situation last year, how it wasn't that big of a deal. People make it a big deal, ends up having the season of his life. It just goes to show you, you know, a lot of times these things, they just, you know, they really don't matter. And last year, you know, it wasn't like a play to say, oh, I'll hold out or anything. It was legitimately he thought he was better off working on his own, doing his routine with his people to prepare for the season as opposed to being out there at those workouts. And, I mean, you've been to some of the offseason practices. Mm-hmm. That it's not hard. It's not hard to imagine that he got more done on his own.
Yeah, and I do think, look, my ears didn't go up with any of the Josh Allen stuff until the captains were announced and Josh wasn't one of them.
That was weird.
And I was like, what is going on, right? Like, is the locker room feeling him not having been around more than we felt it, you know, outside of those kind of spaces? I would imagine this year Josh Allen's going to be voted a team captain.
Yeah.
Would be how that's going to go. But it did feel weird when he wasn't – he was a couple years before that, right? Like, he had been a team captain for the team before.
I think 3 years in a row.
Right. Like, it's just – it didn't happen last year for whatever. It's like Roy Robertson Harris is the captain. It's like, what?
That was a random one.
Yeah. Like, what? And I don't think Roy's a bad player.
Nah.
But Josh is the guy.
Yeah.
You know, on that side of the ball, and certainly the contract getting done would seem to cement the Josh Allen's the guy on the defensive side of the ball for the franchise in the near future.
Yeah, and will continue to be so for the next, you know, several 4 to 5 years, if not potentially even longer than that. I think if Josh Allen ends his career playing only for the Jaguars, I don't think there's anything better you could say for how that draft pick ended up. It would be a storybook, I think, career, especially considering the past draft failures they had. You know, I specifically remember when he got drafted in 2019, I texted somebody with the team and was like, wow, great pick. You know, he could be great across from Ngakoue. And on draft night, they were like, We think he can replace Ngakoue. We think he can be much better. You know, they called their shot. And also, some luck actually went, you know, their way. It felt like, you know, it doesn't happen for the Jaguars very often that things fall right for them. Yeah, they're normally on the wrong side of those pictures of, you know, draft picks and how this guy get picked after them. But, you know, Farrell, Devin White with Tampa at five. He's not even with Tampa anymore. And then obviously Daniel Jones. Those are three teams that all should have picked, you know, Josh Allen.
Sure. And as we continue to talk about the after effects of the deal getting done with Josh Allen, we had mentioned earlier in the show, Demetrius had his mock draft on Monday. He had Jared versus the pick. We talked to him yesterday, and he seems to have changed his mind on what he might do with that going forward in the mock drafts. He'll be releasing on the next couple Mondays leading into the draft. But let's talk about the impact of Josh Allen having that deal done on what the Jags may do with that 17th pick, if there is an impact at all, what that may mean for if they are on the clock at 17 and Jared Verse is available, what does that mean for the Jacksonville Jaguars? We'll discuss that as we'll wrap it up here on a Thursday edition of Jaguars Today, coming up next right here on 1010XL.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Tony Smith, John Shipley here with you as we're getting ready to put a bow here on this edition of Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey on assignment, Pockets alongside as well, as we continue to react to the deal getting done for Josh Allen yesterday. We've talked about a bunch of different aspects of it, what it could mean as far as with the money they've created. Are they willing to make one more splash right in this offseason? Are they willing to make a move up and be aggressive to try to go get one of these receivers in this draft? You know, those kind of things we've discussed, those kind of options. We haven't talked a whole lot about 17,
yeah,
which is the overwhelming likelihood that they're going to be picking at 17, you know, is what's going to wind up happening with this whole process. I've mentioned a couple times Demetrius had Jared Verse as the pick on Monday, and we talked about it on the show after the deal had gotten done with Josh Allen, and Dimps asked if I felt the same way about it yesterday that I did on Monday, right, when I saw the pick. And, you know, I was trying to think through it. I was like, yeah, I think I do feel the same about the pick of Verse yesterday, even with the Allen deal having gotten done.
I agree.
That I did on Monday, because I'm not – the reason I would be excited about Verse at 17 is not because he's an edge, right? I would be excited about Verse because it's Jared Verse.
Yeah.
Right? So if it wound up playing out where he happened to be a name that was available to him at 17, I don't know how high on the list of priorities he would be for me exactly. But if that's the name that wound up being called by Jacksonville, I'd be like, yeah, like it's an edge. They could use help at edge always. You know, like it's never a bad idea.
At the end of the day, simply picking a good football player is, you know, God's celebration in the first round.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you. I feel the same way, mostly because I think that, you know, Josh's situation, even before it was resolved with this contract, it was always seen as he was going to be hanging around, I think. You know, it's not like some other TAD guys where you know, you didn't see any trade scenarios or anything out like that. It always felt like it was kind of the unspoken thing, is that he'll be around, you know, for the long haul until it became official. But I'm with you. I think Verse is probably one of the 20 best players in the draft. And when you're picking at 17, I think that obviously need factors into it a bit, but I just don't think you can go wrong with best player available. Now, everybody will disagree on best player available. I know a lot of fans think that could be Brian Thomas. I personally think differently. I think there's a good chance that best player available does meet with a need and very well could be a cornerback. Could be an offensive lineman, too. I mean, they've clearly been doing their homework on offensive linemen. You know, they had Troy Fatu'anu in for a visit. They had Amarius Mims in for a visit. And Mims, even though he doesn't have that experience and production that Trent Baalke has coveted in the past for prospects, he just looks like a Trent Baalke prospect, you know? So I think taking the best player at 17 is more important than saying, okay, how does he fit into things exactly now? Because, I mean, you see the best drafting teams, they do it every year. I mean, Philadelphia takes a pass rusher or an offensive lineman nearly every year when it feels like they don't need to. And it, you know, other than Andre Dillard, it feels like it works out every time.
Yeah. How many, we had mentioned this offhand during the show this morning. You mentioned maybe a round of separation between the top three receivers and whoever the fourth guy might be, whether it be Thomas Jr. or whoever that might be. How many receivers do you think – how many receivers would you have a first-round grade on this year, right? If you just made it that broad, right? Like, you got those three guys at the top of your first round grades, right? But how many receivers do you think you'd have a first round grade on this year? And how many do you think the team likely has a first round grade on?
It's such an odd draft because you have three receiver prospects who could, you know, make the case for, along with Ja'Marr Chase, best receiver prospect in the last, you know, decade or so. Mm-hmm. And then I think you have a dozen or so second rounders. I think in a vacuum, you're better off taking Brian Thomas top of the second round than you are top 20 and stuff like that. I know he's probably the biggest freak athlete at receiver in the draft class, had great production last year, but I do think he's a little bit of a, you know, he's really good, obviously, on the deep ball, the nine route, but I do think that he has to flesh out some other parts of his game. I think there are some parts of him maybe fighting through contact that, yeah, and then you look at the metrics, yards per route run, I think is one of the most predictive metrics in football today. I mean, you look at every single NFL season, and the best receivers in football always rank highly in that. Him and Adonai Mitchell both rank pretty lowly in that. And, mm-hmm. yeah, you can make the case for context and everything. Adonai Mitchell didn't have a great quarterback, but what's Brian Thomas's excuse? Because, I mean, it had a Heisman quarterback, you know? Did. So I think that there are a lot of receivers who are second- and third-round talents in this draft more than most years. I really don't think there are that many first-round receivers, but I'm lower on some of these guys in the consensus.
Sure. Who is your favorite prospect at this point in the process for the Jags at 17?
Terrion Arnold is one I keep going back to. I legitimately think he could be a Pro Bowl talent at outside cornerback, mm-hmm. at nickel, and at safety. Obviously, they have their nickel, allegedly, in Darnell Savage, but I think you can throw him in there really anywhere, and he would make an impact. I think, obviously, Kenyon Mitchell, if he fell to 17, I think he'd be a home run. Troy Fa'anu, I'm a big fan of his. I think he could legitimately play left tackle, right tackle, left guard, right guard. I've seen some people who are much smarter than me when it comes to evaluating offensive line say they even think he could play center. So I think just taking a guy who could be a high-level starter anywhere would really, you know, make a lot of sense.
Let's hear from Josh Allen one more time before we get into our Chad and Sandy real estate question of the day today. Josh Allen, we've talked about he's not willing to shy away from how high he's willing to try to reach, right, in his time here in Jacksonville. And yesterday he made that clear when he said, nah, job's not done, just haven't gotten this second contract done yesterday.
Job not done yet. You know, and that's why I want to tell the fan base, like, I'm extremely blessed and honored to get this paycheck or to get these checks, but I have to, you know, I still set goals for myself. I was defensive player of the year is my next goal. Winning a Super Bowl, being the MVP of it.
Yeah. Guys talking about Super Bowl, yeah. MVP. if you're a Jaguars fan and that doesn't get you a little bit pumped up,
yeah.
You know, you can feel however you want to feel about how realistic you think that is, right, for the Jags to be in a Super Bowl anytime soon. But one of your best players talking about, I want to be the MVP.
Yeah.
You know, that game, I don't know how your reaction to that can be anything, but yeah, let's go.
Listening to Josh Allen yesterday, to me, it very much said that he feels like he is just now becoming the player that, you know, he is and that he thinks he should be, which I think should get everybody excited. Like I said earlier, I really think the next couple of years are going to have a lot more in store for him than the first 5 years had.
Yeah, I think, you know, trying to answer the question we put out there today, with Josh being willing to talk about it, what I believe Josh Allen's legacy will wind up being here in Jacksonville, I think he's got the potential to fulfill all that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I do, and I've felt that way for a number of years with Josh. And now I think the fan base is allowed to rally behind him.
Yeah. Now we don't look so crazy.
Right. Like, they're allowed to rally behind a guy who did just set the single season franchise record for sacks, and now he's got the second contract, and we know he's going to be here for the next 5 years. So you can start really trying to, what does that look like long term? But I think he will pretty easily wind up being the best player on defense in the franchise's history by the time this deal is done. And I don't think it's nuts for him to be talking about defensive player of the year, right, in the league. And I don't think it's nuts for him to be talking about, I want to win a Super Bowl and be the MVP of that game. Like, I think he's a talented enough player that setting those goals aren't the kind of goals that when they say it, you're like, what? Are you out of your mind? Like, yeah. That doesn't feel out of his mind to me. That feels like within, it's at the far edge of what I think he can accomplish, but I don't think it's out of his reach to accomplish those kinds of things.
If they had a better season as a team, he would have been, in my opinion, in that defensive player of the year, you know, talk with Myles Garrett, TJ Watt, et cetera. I think the entire hubris of them, you know, being the collapse team this year probably hurt him in terms of national perception, but he had the kind of year that a defensive player of the year has.
John, appreciate you coming in today, bud.
No, thank you, man.
And we'll talk to you plenty between now and the draft, I'm sure.
2 more weeks.
Yeah, we got a couple more weeks, 2 weeks from today. We'll get the first round of the NFL draft behind us. Like, we won't have to think about that except for the few days afterwards where we're reacting to it and then whatever that's going to mean for going into next year. But appreciate you coming in for a couple hours this morning. It was cool to see Josh yesterday. I told you before the show, to watch him at the end of the press conference when one of the PR people came in and said one more question, and Josh was like, "Nah, I'm getting my boy John." I was like, that's our guy.
Yeah. You know,
shout out.
You're right. That's Shipley that he's talking about there.
And that shows you the kind of person that they just paid. You can't ask for a better guy.
No, John, you are a good dude.
I'm all right.
Josh Allen is a great dude and couldn't be happier, you know,
100%.
For that guy and his family and, you know, all of them being in the room yesterday while all that's going on and the emotions of that moment for him. You know, you can't, if you're a fan of the team, you're watching that dude in that moment with those kids in that room.
Easiest guy to root for.
Right. Like, how emotional it was for, you know, everyone watches. Like, this is crazy. And that Josh could get through the whole thing and just be like, I got to stop right now. I might cry. Like, if I'm going to talk about my wife, I'm going to cry.
Yeah.
You know, like that kind of – it's cool to see a guy that's that in touch with the entire situation and that happy about how the whole thing worked out. It's like, I'm going to – you think I'm going to be here for 50 years.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's the way that it felt.
It did.
From Josh Allen yesterday, and let's hope that that's how the whole thing works out. And one more time, thank you so much for being in today.
Thank you.
We'll be talking to you again throughout the draft process. That'll do it for us here this morning. Thanks to Josh Allen for giving us something to talk about throughout the show. For John Shipley, for Dylan Denmark, for an on-assignment Mike Dempsey, I'm Tony Smith. We got Helmets and Heels coming up next from noon to 2. Stay tuned right here on 1010 XL.